presenter. Oh, Suzette just joined. Hi, Suzette. Mark is a man who needs no introduction. He and his wife Meg work with many corporations. Mark is also a coach, and he has written a book recently called The Empathic Enterprise. And we are very, very pleased to have him talk to us today. And Mark, I'm going to let you give an overview of what you're going to be speaking on. And I'm asking everybody who joins, please go on mute unless you're asking a question. So without any further ado, Mark, would you please take it on, please?
Thank you, Kathy. And if I happen to speak too loudly, give me a signal. With technology, I have a tendency to yell because I'm not always aware of the volume. What I have in mind is to share with you an activity that Meg and I often use in our leadership work. And it can be quite relevant for dealing with challenges of virtual distance, matrix organizations, intercultural challenges. And I often use it when I'm working with leaders on strategic communication. So I hope you'll find this a flexible and versatile piece. And toward the end of the session, I'll be very interested to hear how you all conceive of how you might use it in your own coaching work. So let me jump in. It's going to be in three sections. The piece is called Lost in Translation. There's an activity which I'll walk you through fairly quickly, maybe 15 minutes of kind of downloading, check for understanding, hear any questions you might have. There's a second smaller theoretical piece, very brief but important. And then finally, a third activity that I like to do around network mapping. In terms of the coaching competencies, I find that this is very relevant for trust and intimacy and can also be very helpful for active listening, because this has got a lot to do with communication. So there may be other applications as well, but those are the two I tend to focus on. Let me take a quick stop. Kathy, are you hearing me? Is the volume okay thus far? All good. Okay. So first, the Lost in Translation activity. Long story short, this is an interactive exercise in which teams must reproduce a picture that they cannot see. So I'm going to walk you through how this would look if I were doing it in a plenary classroom with 15 participants. And I think you'll hopefully see the movie in your head. I've got these 15 participants. I line them up in the front of the room and divide them into groups of three. Each team has a 1, a 2, and a 3, and that will determine the role that they have in the game. The number 1 is called the brain. The number 2 is the mouth. The number 3 is the hand. I'm going to send all the brains, all the number 1s, out of the room completely. They go stand in the hall or in the foyer, and each of them receives a simple drawing, a simple picture. Nobody else is going to see that. Only they will see it. And the challenge for each team is to reproduce that picture inside the plenary room on a big sheet of flip chart paper. So the way it's going to work, once we start the exercise, each hand, each number 3, is going to go find a writing position, a drawing position. They have a marker and a piece of paper. They're the ones that will actually draw. The brain is out in the foyer, and the mouth, participant number 2, goes to that brain, and without seeing the picture, without showing the picture, the number 1, the brain, gives instructions. Draw a square, draw a triangle on top of it, have a line coming out to the right, yada yada. Gives a few instructions. The number 2, the mouth, may not ask questions, may not seek clarification. One of the key points here is the communication is one direction, only going from the brain to the mouth. After a moment of giving these instructions, the mouth turns and goes into the hand and relays the instructions. And in this instance, the mouth is doing all the talking, and the hand cannot ask questions, just has to try to reproduce, follow those instructions as well as they can. This goes on for about 10 minutes, back and forth. The mouth can make 5 or 6 trips, but always the communication is one direction, from the brain to the mouth, from the mouth to the hand. And again, the idea is that the hand is reproducing the picture that the brain is looking at. After 10 minutes, I'll say, time's up. And I'll ask the brains to go into the plenary room, find their team, and show them the original picture. And this typically ends up with a lot of laughter, because obviously it's approximately the same, but there are going to be some differences. And the arm may be on the wrong side, the hat may be pointing the other direction. People tend to feel a lot of humor around this because it's fun and it's very active and it's not a lecture, it's an activity. So we let them do that for a few minutes. They may want to take a photograph of what they've done. Then I have them do a gallery walk and see how your colleagues did. So you walk around and see how everybody else did with this challenge of duplicating a picture you cannot see. The key part is the debrief at the end, because I'll call the people together in a circle and I say, all right, who is a brain? What was your biggest challenge? What was that like for you? And inevitably they'll say, well, I couldn't see what was going on. I was out here in the hall. I could not see the progress that was being made, the mistakes that were being made. What about you, hands? What was your challenge? Well, I had doubts and I couldn't ask questions. I couldn't get any feedback. I couldn't clarify anything from the mouth. I just had to do my best. What about the mouths? The mouths typically say, well, I was very frustrated because I didn't quite understand the instructions clearly, so I had to fill in gaps and make things up. So you get this feedback from the three different roles. And then I would say, if I'm working on strategy, I'd say, all right, imagine that the brain is the CEO and that's the original strategy for your organization. Imagine that the mouth is middle management and that the hand is the field, the associates that are trying to execute the strategy. Why do we see such a difference between that original conception, the picture, and then the picture that was drawn? And by now they're getting it. They go, well, lack of feedback, I couldn't ask questions, I had doubts, I was filling in gaps. It gets people thinking, ah, it's about the communication, the clarity of the instructions, the feedback, the confirming understanding. If the discussion is more about virtual distance or matrix organizations or intercultural challenges, you can tilt the questions and answers in that direction. But regardless, I feel the piece makes a very good statement about communication gaps and the need for clarity, the need for feedback, confirming understanding, strategic communication, making sure that people can understand what's trying to be accomplished. This, in a nutshell, is the end of the first third. This is the introductory activity that sets up what comes next. So I've gone through it very quickly. But this might be a chance to pause for you to ask any questions or confirm understanding with me. So I'll open it up, Kathy.
Okay, anybody have any questions? Don't forget to unmute so far. Mary.
Hi, Mark, this is fun. I'm curious if you've noticed any differences between those who are visually dominant, kinesthetically dominant, or auditorily dominant, or combined mode. Has that ever come up?
As I think about it, not in the discussions per se. What I can say is when we run this activity, people tend to enjoy it very much because they're moving around, it's low risk. But I've not actually explored that aspect of it, the type of learning. And I've always made a point to organize them randomly. It may be by dates of birth or by height. So I've never attempted to group people in that fashion. So that's all I know on that point. Thank you. Thank you. Anything else?
Just a logistic question, going back to the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
A group of 20... You have groups of five? I mean, how many individual hands and brains do you do a group of 20 into?
Good question. What I would do there, it has to be groups of three because there are three roles. So ideally, I would rope in one more person so I have 21. You know, if I have a program manager working with me, I might ask him or her to come in and be the third person. If I have, say, 19, I might ask that one person to be my enforcer, you know, or my helper, to ensure that nobody's showing the picture or that people are not asking questions. You don't need to over-engineer it, but my best results come when we have complete groups of three and everybody gets to play. Good question. Thank you.
Mark, which kind of indication, information the brain gives to the mouth?
The brain is giving instructions on what to draw. The brain has the picture in front of her. She's the only one who can see it. And, you know, for example, we have one simple cartoon drawing. It's a policeman directing traffic, and he has a stop sign in his hand, right? So the first instruction might be, draw a policeman pointing to his left, all right? And then make the hat pointy with a star on the top, and then draw a stop sign in the left hand. So very step-by-step basic things. What's interesting, Jerry, is that if you're not clear in the instructions, the person may put the hat in the other hand or forget to write the star, draw the star. And it underlines the importance of precision in giving the instructions. But it's all about reproducing the picture, whatever needs to be done to reproduce the picture.
And the hands cannot talk. Is it right? Is it correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Thank you.
I have a visitor.
I couldn't talk.
Okay. Yeah, Meg was here. Yes, that's a very important point, Jerry, that we want the communication to be unidirectional. So the mouth may not speak to the brain, and the hand may not speak to the mouth. And cutting off this opportunity for feedback and clarification inevitably leads to some confusion and reminds people, hey, we really need to build that into whatever we're doing. Feedback, confirming understanding, active listening, intelligent questions, what have you. And again, you just set this up at the beginning and then you kind of enforce it to make sure they're following that rule. And a big priority is just to have fun with it. It's a game, but it's a game with a message. Anything else on logistics for that activity?
One more quick question. So the mouth can go back and forth multiple times to the brain to get more instructions to give to the hand?
Absolutely. And in fact, if you're going to do this with a group, you might specify that at the beginning, because some people will just assume they have to memorize the whole thing all in one go. And it's not reasonable. So you say, I'm going to give you 10 minutes. The mouth can go back and forth probably 5 or 6 times. So don't feel compelled to do it all at once. And there is too much detail. You want to think also if someone's wearing high heels, they might want to take those shoes off if they're the mouth, right? Because there's going to be running back and forth. Again, it works well in a large plenary room, and there are a lot of learning points. For example, once we get talking about the strategic element, I'll stop and I'll say to the group, have you ever had a boss who's constantly asking for results from the field? How's it working? How's it working? And everybody nods their heads, oh yeah, we've seen that. Think about it. You're out in the hall, you can't see what's going on down the line with your strategy. You're demanding data, so you can adapt the strategy. And I think, oh, yeah, that makes perfect sense. And I try to encourage this type of discussion. Yes, if I'm a hand, I'm in the field, I have feedback, but if nobody's listening to my feedback back up the chain, we're not able to tweak the strategy. So, again, my focus is often strategic when I'm working with senior leaders, but this can be adapted to deal with a number of challenges. Virtual distance, which is the way I use it related to my book, matrix organizations, intercultural challenges. So I invite you to be creative. I think there's a lot here that you can work with. May I go on to the second part? Yes? Okay, I see Kathy giving me a nod. So we've set this up, and ideally we've piqued their interest. We've made this point that clear communication, feedback, listening, confirmation are all very important. So in a way, they're primed. So I have them sit back down, and I'll say, now I'd like to just spend 5 minutes on a bit of theory, and I'm going to use the technique of disaggregation, breaking something into smaller pieces so we can analyze it. We often talk about virtual distance as this challenge, virtual teams, a challenge. So now this is focusing on breaking virtual distance into three pieces, three axes. I'm moving away now from the strategic discussion. I'm looking at virtual distance. I ask people to think first of physical distance. This person that you're interacting with, are they across the hall in the same building, on another floor, in another city, across the ocean, across the world? That's one variable, physical distance, and how does it impact your work together, physical distance. The second axis is emotional affinity. How do you get along with that person? What is the level of trust, intimacy, rapport, comfort when you're speaking together? Just the emotional side, the personal connection. The third element, and this is one that people often forget, it's the operational distance. This is about getting things done. All the little challenges that present themselves in the work world that make it difficult to get things done. Well, I don't have the same software as you do on your computer. I can't read your presentation. Time zone differences. I'm calling Thailand and there's an 8-hour time difference. That presents a challenge. I need to talk to somebody in Dubai and it's Friday, and I need to know that on Fridays, they're on their weekend in Dubai. There's not going to be anybody answering the phone. Paper sizes. Meg and I struggle a lot with faxes back and forth with the U.S. because of the different paper sizes and alignments. I mean, these are small details, but they add up. And what we want people to do is think of virtual distance in these different ways so they can zero in on the things that can be fixed. So again, the entire theoretical part of the piece is disaggregating virtual distance into these three categories. The physical distance between you and that individual, whatever it may be. The emotional distance, which is around intimacy, trust, comfort, rapport, etc. And then finally, these operational variables. So once people are comfortable with this, and it's not rocket science, we segue into the third and final piece of the activity, which is network mapping. I call it the constellation. And in this, I might ask the individuals to draw a circle on the page and put their name in the middle. You're in the middle of your constellation. And then around that, four or five circles that represent your virtual stakeholders, the people with whom you work virtually most of the time. And whoever that is, you just put their name in that circle. And then I give them 10 minutes or so right there in class to think about each of those bilateral relationships, you and Joe, you and Barbara, you and Steve. And with some simple ranking system, maybe 1 to 5, where 1 is a very small distance and 5 is a very large distance, just rank that. All right, if I'm thinking about my relationship with Barbara, who's in Colorado, what number would I put by the physical distance? What number might I put by emotional, and likewise with operational? And what this does is it gets people to think with a degree of rigor about, all right, how does this relationship work, and where should I focus my attention? Physical distance isn't really going to change unless I move to Denver, so I'm aware of that. But we still think about it, consider it. But we tend to focus more on, all right, what can I do to reduce the emotional distance? Building trust and intimacy, for example, what might I do? And operational, these technical, practical things that create glitches. You know, it may be being more clear about expectations at the beginning of a project. being more aware of the time zones and scheduling ahead of time to avoid calling at the end of her day when she's going home and I'm just getting to the office, what have you. And people tend to respond very well to this because it gives them something. They think about it because they don't normally really give it much thought. They just say, well, I need to talk to Barbara, I need to get it done. I like to give people time in the classroom to think this through. And then once they've gone through the rankings, a little tabletop exercise to share thoughts and tips. They've listened to me for quite a bit. All right, at your tables, discuss what you've discovered here and give each other some tips on how you might work with some of these challenges. And then the discussions are usually pretty lively because these people have a lot of experience and they're dealing with this day to day. So, I'm working fast, but I want to leave plenty of time for discussion and questions and your insights. Just recapping, I've tried to outline a three-step activity. I call the whole thing Lost in Translation. The beginning is that picture game, which highlights the importance of clear communication, listening, asking pertinent questions, confirming understanding, etc. And it also allows us to put it in different contexts, strategic, virtual, intercultural, matrix, what have you. The second part, very brief theoretical discussion, is around three ways to think about virtual distance: physical, emotional, operational. And then finally, putting this to work by drawing their own virtual constellations and thinking for a while, okay, what can I do to make these better? And then getting some tips and insights from their own colleagues. We do this in a lot of our leadership work abroad, and the whole activity may run an hour. But obviously, you would want to adapt what is valuable to your own coaching sessions, perhaps team coaching, leadership, I don't know. I'm throwing this out to you, and I'm very interested how you might use it in your work. So with that, I'll stop, and let's open it up.
Can you, Mark, please tell me a little bit again between the difference between in the phase two,
yes,
the technical part and the technical distance and the operative distance?
Okay, I don't think, Jerry, that I mentioned technical distance.
That's something I've written.
All right, I may have slipped up.
Physical, you said.
Yeah, the three axes that I like to work with are physical, which is purely kilometers or miles or feet. You know, that's the physical distance. The second is the emotional, you know, the personal connection you have or don't have with that person. And the third, and probably pretty complex, is operational.
Operational.
Which can include technical things like do our computers communicate with one another, right? There are technical aspects to it. But broadly defined, it can be things like time zones, cultural expectations. I mean, I do a lot of work with Brazil, and I think you may know this. Conceptions of time and deadlines in Brazil are quite different from those in Germany, for example. You need to build that into your relationship. So operational challenges are broadly defined, and however you choose to define them is up to you. But the three big categories would indeed be physical, emotional, operational.
Thank you.
Is that better? Does that clarify things?
Much more. Thank you very much.
Okay. And technical would be a subset of operational challenges.
Mark, I just wanted to thank you. I'm very impressed with the clarity of presentation and your summarization of it. And I think this could lend itself to a beginning of a group, a virtual group, an international group. I'm building a mastermind group, and this might be a way to help set a code of how to communicate.
Thank you, Eileen. And building on what you've said, the first and most important point is simply to build awareness. Mm-hmm. And using it as a kickoff activity with a new group or a new team. I could see that working, because you avoid a lot of mistakes when you're aware of it from the beginning. So thank you. That's very positive. I appreciate it.
Mark, Evan here. I suppose one could also do just part two and three as one exercise, if you didn't have A, the time, or if it was a particularly geographical distance or things like that, because you won't have the teams around you to do that, that's not face to face. So in fact, it could be another exercise that could be done with a group online, such as this, so it doesn't have to be done in all three sections, I guess, is what I'm saying.
I would agree completely. Again, my perspective is usually in front of a group of people where you have time and space to do it. But certainly even in a coaching session, I think part two could be interesting to stimulate discussion. You know, you're coaching somebody who's having trouble communicating with a colleague across the world. Mm-hmm. Simply breaking it down with those three axes and getting them to think about the three types of distance could be very useful for them. So I agree completely, Kevin. It's a tool to be used in the way that you all see fit.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess it's interesting because a lot of the work that we do is unpacking. And so unpacking with those three different axis is a really nice way of doing it. It's great. Thanks.
Thank you for that thought.
Hi, this is Phil. I've got a question. I'm seeing just marvelous, vast capabilities in Zoom, and I could see more and more into the future that we're going to have more and more teams meeting primarily in Zoom that are from across the world, because you need just that right expertise from a different country. And have you managed these kinds of things? Do you have any suggestions or techniques to make Zoom more effective or use it more effectively?
Well, thank you for the question, Phil. Not specifically targeted around Zoom, but the idea behind this is indeed to help teams work better in these situations. Mm-hmm. The gist of my book, if I may mention that, is around the fact that we're losing things with virtual communication. Mm-hmm. When things are slipping through the gaps, and we need to make an effort to compensate for that. So I think there is a connection there. I do.
I saw a long time ago research that said if a team could meet personally and meet each other, you know, hands-on for a day or two, for the next year, they had this personal trust and connection and joking. Do you have any information about that?
Well, it's all anecdotal, but in my life, that is absolutely true. I mean, anytime this question comes up, I say, if there's any way at all, try to get together at least once. Have a coffee, go to dinner, stay after a meeting. Because this is how we operate as humans. Sometimes it's not really possible to get together physically. You've got people in Hong Kong and other people in Europe. Nevertheless, if we think about it, there are steps that could be taken. For example, you're on a Skype call. Before you jump into the work, say, how are things in Hong Kong? How's the weather? How's your family? How about the Super Bowl? You know, anything to break the ice and establish a little more rapport. And sometimes we just forget to do this. So continue being a human being, Phil. That's the best advice I have.
Oh, gosh.
Keep going.
Good.
So, Phil, one of the nice things about Zoom is it has breakout rooms. And you can use those breakout rooms. You can put off hands and, well, you can use them virtually for the same type of thing where they can't see them. They can't hear what's going on. So, just to your question. And then Sharon had a question, too.
It was precisely that, the technology to actually implement this process in a virtual world. And so I haven't used the breakout room, so that was part of my question, is how can you create digitally the same space that Mark was talking about in 3D space themselves. So I guess my question would be logistics, Kathy, that your number two person or your your mouth would have access to the one room and to the three room, and the one and three are kind of in their own rooms. So you've got this digital dance going on. That's all. It was a figuring that one out.
Yeah, and I don't know how many rooms that Zoom allows you. I'll have to look that up, or anybody can look it up. But they work very well, because when you're in a room, you don't hear or see anything going on in the main room or in the other room. And so it works really well. Yeah.
My name is Tara, and I have a question or a comment. And for Mark, so I'm looking at this network mapping, and I'm thinking about, you know, group coaching or team coaching. And when I look at this network mapping possibility, I think about perhaps a team has an issue. And so this is an opportunity. This network mapping is a way to sort of do a little bit of diagnostic and exploration, maybe of a common issue. And I'm also appreciating with this network mapping, you know, putting ourselves in the center of that bubble, because ultimately we're, you know, systems aren't outside. We are a part of the system, and the system is a part of us. And I'm appreciating this link to our own kind of personal accountability, and how do we create and generate the world that we're living in, and then how is it influencing us as well. And so I'm just thinking about, have you used this with in a group or team coaching situation where maybe they're network mapping their own perspective on a common issue?
Actually,
that kind of makes me intrigued.
Actually, we have, and thank you for these comments, Helen. I don't go into these things with that agenda, but as you say, very often when you give people this opportunity to diagnose and think about it and then discuss it, a lot of these things do come out, and Meg and I, if we're doing this together, make a real effort to kind of step into the background, because at this point, our job is done. We facilitated that discussion. They will diagnose and solve their own problems, and we're just caretakers. So this does happen if you give them the opportunity, but don't start the this is why we're doing it. We're going to ask you to diagnose these things, because then then it's not as risk-free. So just let it happen, and it will often evolve by itself.
Yeah, that's interesting. So I have an organization development, you know, background, and so I do tend to think of, you know, what are the, you know, presenting issues that teams or groups have, and then how can they, you know, like you said, bring their own wisdom and problem-solving and insight into a common issue. And so that's kind of where I often will go. And I appreciate you saying that, you know, it's important to sort of, be a facilitator and then not necessarily have the agenda and let them kind of emerge the agenda, you know, as needed. So I was just appreciating that network mapping, and I could see it in a lot of different ways, and that was the first one that came to mind. So.
Well, thank you for your thoughts.
Hi, Mark.
Hello.
This is Victoria.
Hi.
I just want to say thank you for sharing these interesting exercises with us. And for me, I'm just putting it into action next Friday, because I have a coaching with a group of two people. These are two old friends. They have been friends for 20 years, and now they are starting a company together. Huh? And they're not very sure how are they working as a team. So I will start with this exercise of the picture between them. I think it will be very interesting for them to identify the gaps in their communication, or to give some light into this issue. And thank you very much. It will be very useful for me.
Well, I hope it is, Victoria. And what excites me about your statement, you're going to take part of this and use it in your way. And I would encourage all of you to do exactly that. I've given you the outline of how I use this in one situation. but it's really a tool for your use. So break it into pieces, as Kevin said, use it for diagnostic, like we heard from Helen, or use it with the way you've explained, Victoria. It's whatever you make of it.
Yeah, it's perfect, because then objectives of coaching are mainly between their communication as a working team, because they feel very insecure about that. So thank you very much.
Well, good luck with that. Buena suerte.
Gracias.
Mary.
Mark, is this something that you or you and Meg have created together and have copyright over, so to speak?
No. This is something that we saw done in one form, and we've adapted it, embellished it a bit, and we just do it in our own way. So we do not own this. We've just built it from something that we saw. So I have no concerns. Terry, if you do want to send me some money, I'm okay with that. I don't mind.
Always, Mark. Always.
We don't own it. It's out in the public now.
Okay. I wanted to know if we can give credit to anyone as we use the material. So the answer is...
The bit that's been explored academically is dividing the theory part, the three axes. If you'd like, I can go find out who first came up with that model, physical, emotional, operational. I think the rest is just common.
Okay.
Network mapping is just out there, and this game is just something that a friend of ours put together on her own, and we adapted it.
Okay.
So if you feel the need to give credit, I think it would be around the three-axis framework. Would you like me to look that up?
If someone wants that, why don't they connect with you, Mark?
Okay.
Okay.
It'll be a little bit. I'll do it when I get back to Europe. I won't be able to do this in the next days, but I'll be happy to follow up once I'm back in Portugal next week. Thank you for this idea.
Sure. The only other, the piece I wanted to contribute was, this rings a little familiarity, the network mapping. And the element that I had in there years ago was an added element of control. How much control do you perceive you have in each of these relationships? And that also brought in an element of great conversation,
yeah.
Perceived versus real, etc.
I bet that starts some good discussions. I'll make a note of that myself. That's quite interesting. So thank you for that, Terry.
Terry, I can appreciate, this is Elaine, I can appreciate your wanting to give credit. But I agree with Mark. This has been around for, the way Mark described it, but the foundation of this has been around for a while. I'm not sure it'd be even possible to find out what the origin is. I just wouldn't worry about it.
Thank you. I have released the worry. Thanks,
Thank
Elaine.
You. Thanks, Elaine. So, I do tend to move through these things quickly. We've still got a bit of time if need be. Is there anything else I can do for any of you? Any questions or comments that I can help with?
Mark, this is Kathy. I'd like to bring up one thing about this would work really, really well on agile teams. A lot of agile teams are distributed, where half the team is in India and the other half is here in the U.S.
Yep.
This is a beautiful thing to be used in a retrospective to help them understand the whole communication gap piece.
Well, exactly. And in building on what you said and Helen's point earlier about the diagnostic, just getting an agile team or distributed team to discuss these things, you're going to get a lot of, I hadn't really thought of that. That hadn't occurred to me. I didn't realize that was an issue for you. And every one of those things that comes up and gets discussed and addressed you're getting a little bit better. You're becoming a bit more productive. The team is working a little better. So I do tell people this is not a silver bullet that will solve every problem, but incrementally, you're going to see some improvement. So I heartily endorse what you say, Kathy. Distributed teams almost always benefit from this type of discussion.
Hi, Phil again. Just a quick comment. I'm also a futurist, and more information technology is going to be driving us towards more and more teams working together. So team coaching is going to be growing and growing, and the ability to use your technique and Zoom and getting people to work together from across the world is going to become critically important for our advancement and success. So it's coming faster than you might imagine. By the way, the Apple leader has just said that augmented reality is going to be bigger than the iPhone. So that's coming too. Thank you.
Helen, you had a comment?
Yeah, thank you. So I just wanted to get clarity again about how much time it takes. I thought I heard it takes about an hour for this activity, but I didn't know. Do we mean the network mapping activity or all three activities? So if we could just remind me anyway, and maybe anyone else if they have the same question, if you could just go over, like, in generally, how much time have you experienced with each of these pieces? That would be helpful for me.
Thank you for that question. I will explain how it works for me, and it's usually pretty consistent. Setting up and running the first activity, I'm talking about the drawing the picture thing, takes about 20 minutes to do it properly because there's confusion. I usually devote 10 more minutes to the debrief because the debrief is quite key. So the setup, the activity, and the debrief, roughly half an hour. That's worked quite well for us. Then we segue into that brief theoretical discussion about the three axes, physical, emotional, operational. 5 minutes, maybe a little more, but you don't want to over-engineer that. It's just a simple concept. I draw one picture on the flip chart with three axes, like an economics graph, and people get it. So 5+ minutes for that. The constellation thing, another 20 minutes or so. And depending upon the amount of time that you have available for the activity, the amount of energy that they're putting into the group discussion after they do their own constellations, you may want to go longer if they're really into it. But round numbers, I would devote an hour. And that would allow time for every piece of it and a bit of table talk as well, which they like. And you will have given it the time it deserves. So I'd say an hour, Helen.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
No. Yes. Can I ask something, Mark, with regards to your book? I know it's aside from what we're talking about. Is that allowable here?
Certainly. Yeah, I'm flattered. Thank you, Kevin.
Okay, first of all, thanks very much for the book. Thanks. It was great. I got a lot of information out of it. My question to you is, I'm doing some work with university students at UBC. It's a leadership weekend, and it's all on energy management, so vitality, leadership vitality. And so the consequence is that I would like to know what your thoughts are in my discussion a little bit around the technology, because I'm sure they will have all of their devices, and they're millennials, and they are don't have a large attention span necessarily. So anything around that? A suggestion?
Could you rephrase the question for me, Kevin? I'm not sure I understood.
The question is, because of the work that you've done in the book and also around the technology and the empathetic aspect of it, what are you suggesting or what would you suggest that I speak to them about with regards to being on too much technology and how it can drain your energy or in whichever?
All right. Well, first, having been with you in a number of workshops, Kevin, I don't think you're going to have any trouble keeping their attention. I can vouch for that. With that said, a couple rules that you've seen me follow, and I think they're pretty good in this context. One, I almost always lead with an activity. If I can ever do that, I'm going to start with something that involves them and not listening to me. A second thing to consider, particularly with this generation that you're speaking of, if you design something or if you direct your comment so it's about them, they're going to be that much more engaged. It may be challenging them. If you want to do something around multitasking, whatever it is, because a lot of these youngsters are really into multitasking, doing a lot of things at one time with their technology. If you can kick off with an activity that illustrates something, a bit like what I've described here, mm-hmm. rather than talking about it, mm-hmm. I think you're going to get a lot more engagement up front. Also, if you can understand what some of the challenges they're facing in their work or at their point in life, then they'll see the utility of what you're talking about. And I think you know this intuitively. Make it about them, not what you know, but what they want to know. And I think that will continue to draw them in. Frankly, the challenge I give myself, I try to make the class so fun that they're never tempted to look at their emails. You know, they forget about it because they're so involved in whatever we're doing. It takes a lot of energy, but it works. And at the end of the day, they say, wow, that was a fast day. I didn't check my email the whole time. So again, it's a certain approach. It's not necessarily the best. But if you go in with activities and make things about them and their concerns, you'll be way ahead of the game.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot, Mac.
I just wanted to add something that you had talked about was breaking the items down, the desegregation of them. And it occurred to me that about something that I bought at our retreat, our son retreat, one of the girls there, Lisa, developed a pack, a card deck for communication. And I thought that when people discover some of their challenges, this card deck, what was Lisa's last name, Terry?
Neighbors.
You're muted.
Lisa Neighbors, the dialogue yes. deck.
Yes, thank you. But taking one of these items and asking more questions about it, I think it would really lend itself to work hand in hand, to take one of those components, look at it, and then see how they can work with it each week or something. But anyway, just thought I'd share that.
Am I done? Am I free?
Do we have any other questions? Well, then, Mark, thank you so much. This is fascinating. Wait, it looks like Terry has something.
Yeah.
I have one more comment. Being sensitive to not being a trained organization development specialist or consultant, I've always seen the magnificence of what one can do who has that training. And I've always cautioned people who are coaches and don't have that training not to get into that arena without training. I think group facilitation and OD intervention has a lot of merit and value, and one needs training in that field to proceed. This is not just pure coaching. Someone who learns pure coaching, it would be very different if they did this.
Can I also, Kathy, I don't know if I'm allowed to ask this question.
Uh-oh.
But the community is on here, is that I work with a company called Corporate Learning Solutions out of London, and they're opening up and they have a contract on the West Coast or the East Coast of the United States. And they're looking for trainers. And so I'm just throwing it out to people here. If they want to contact me, I can let them be in contact with the company and see if they would be interested.
So there's an opportunity there if you're interested. Get in touch with Kevin. All righty. Mark, this is great. This is definitely something I can use with my team. We all know how to get in touch with you with questions, et cetera. And thank you so very much for sharing your time with us and your knowledge and wisdom.
Well, thank you.